Hello, thank you all for coming. This work is done in conjunction with Ed Lewis at UC Davis and Joel Siegel at the USDA. So traditionally, the way we usually hear about entomopathogenic or insect parasitic nematodes is as biological control agents. And that's what they're doing in pistachio orchards. The entomopathogenic nematode Steinernema carpocapsi is a surface foraging nematode. And it's used in pistachios to control overwintering populations of Amelioas transitella, or navel orangeworm. And since it forages on the surface, it's able to go inside the pistachio nut where the moth larvae are overwintering. And it can actually go inside the nut where pesticides cannot go. And it can achieve a level of control greater than 72%. However, to achieve this level of control, the nematodes are applied at an extremely high rate, which works out to about 25 per square centimeter. So the nematodes go inside the nut, find the larva, and when they enter its body, they release a symbiotic bacteria, which kills the larva within 24 hours. They reproduce inside, and then emerge to go look for new hosts. And when they emerge, the exudates of that symbiotic bacteria are also released into the environment, which include nematicidal and antibiotic chemicals. So these nematodes are currently being used in place of other insecticides in pistachios to control navel orangeworm. Those insecticides are being phased out, and a lot of growers, not necessarily organic growers, have sort of begun to switch over to using these nematodes. So since they're applied in such high density, entomopathogenic nematodes could also be thought of as a resource pulse. And a resource pulse is just a brief, rare, intense increase in resource availability over space or time. So one way to think of a resource pulse that everyone's sort of familiar with are cicadas. These cicadas spend most of their life underground, removed from the rest of the ecosystem, and then suddenly they emerge synchronously and provide a resource for predators. After they've completed their life cycle, they all die and provide a flush of nutrients into the detrital ecosystem. So my question is, how does the native orchard community respond to the addition of so many insect parasitic nematodes? The twist here is they could also not only be a nutrient pulse or a resource pulse for things to eat, but they're also parasites, so they could have other effects. So these responses could be over several different organizational levels that take place over time. In the short term, we could see an individual response. These might be behavioral responses, such as predators aggregating into an area to eat the nematodes, or other animals being repulsed by the chemicals that are released by the nematode symbiotic bacterium. In the very short term, too, there might be parasitism of individuals. Over time, we might see a more numerical population response as predator populations increase and prey populations decrease. And then over an even longer period of time, we could see community-wide responses as these sort of ecological effects cascade outward. There could also be indirect effects on nutrient cycling and soil respiration. So since the Steinernema carpocapsi are applied through the irrigation system and come out of microsprinklers, the animals that are most likely to interact with them are surface-dwelling arthropods. Steinernema also forages on the surface, so it's going to stay on the surface and interact with them. I measured the abundance of these surface-dwelling arthropods using pitfall traps. And these are some of the individuals that I have found so far. There are several families of Columbula. Several families of Columbula. We have several different families as well of predatory mites, some of which are nematode specialists. There are some herbivorous prostigmatid and orobatid mites. We have some beetles, tenebrionids, carabids, and black earwigs. So the methods I used to apply nematodes were The nematodes were applied at a rate of 400 million over 40 acres. The nematodes were suspended in water and then poured into the irrigation system. They came out through the micro sprinklers onto the berm where the trees are located. For my sampling design, I sampled within random blocks of 5 trees in 14 rows. And control trees were designated in parallel rows using a plug to plug up the sprinkler system. So I plugged up this for several hours it took for the nematodes to clear the irrigation system, and then I removed those control plugs. So in each of these blocks here, one of these would be randomly designated as a control tree and one would be a treatment tree. Under each tree, I collected pitfall traps at weeks 1, 3, 5, and 10. And although today I only have data from 1 week, I'm already starting to see some really interesting trends. So sort of the usual suspects of who you would expect to respond to nematode addition would be obviously predatory mites. And in my system, I have several different families. I have Anistids, Regiidae, Adelids, and Gaolilapids. Two of these, Regiids and Gaolilapids, are sort of known nematode predators. And others, such as Anistids and Adelids, run around on the soil surface attacking whatever they can. And as you can see, this one is attacking a fly. It's not too shy about that. So although these are sort of the usual organisms we would expect to respond to nematodes, at 1 week there's no significant difference between treatment and control trees in their abundance. One group that did show a significant difference that was somewhat unexpected was earwigs. The earwig that was the most common in the system was Chelicodes morio, or the black earwig. It's actually a native of Hawaii that has been introduced into California. There were significantly fewer earwigs recovered from under treated trees. And the reason for this is somewhat unclear. It might be direct parasitism of adult earwigs. It could be chemical repulsion. And there are currently no known studies on the susceptibility of earwigs that I know of to entomopathogenic nematodes. An opposite trend was seen in tenebrionid beetles. I have the species Blatstenis discolor. This is a very small beetle. It's only about 8 millimeters long. And there were significantly more of these recovered from under treated trees. I'm not sure if this could be a direct interaction where these small tenebrionid beetles are consuming dead or living nematodes. There are foraging on the surface, and Stenonema carpocapsi nictates to find hosts where it raises itself off the ground, which might make it more accessible to these beetles. It could also be a very fast indirect interaction where the nematode remains might stimulate some sort of moss growth that the tenebrionids are eating. Because traditionally, tenebrionids are thought to just eat decomposing plant material. And after we identified this beetle, we found one record of the gut, analyzing the gut contents of the species, and they found arthropod parts, which indicates that some of its diet, you know, it may be a facultative predator, and so not adverse to opportunistically feeding on any nematodes that might be applied in this system. So in conclusion, in the short term, Stenonema carpocapsi can alter soil arthropod abundance, or surface-dwelling arthropod abundance. And it's important to look at the big picture when we're determining the fate of applications. There might be unexpected responses to organisms we hadn't traditionally thought of as hosts, or things we haven't traditionally thought of as predators. I'm also monitoring this site over time to see how long the effects last. One problem traditionally is persistence of entomopathogenic nematodes. And especially in orchards, if something like tenebrionid beetles are eating them, it might explain their very brief persistence in this system. So stay tuned, because I also have pitfall traps analyzing from weeks 3, 5, and 10. And I'm also looking at the nematode and soil arthropod communities. And in the future, I hope to do some feeding and infection studies on these beetles to see if they will actually eat Steinernema carpocapsi, and also to see if the earwigs can be infected with them. So I'd like to acknowledge my lab mates, people who helped me at S&J Ranch, Becker Underwood for supplying the nematodes, and the University of California, Davis Entomology Department for funding my trip. Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah.
I just had a quick clarification. So did the control trees receive the same amount of water? I know you talked about plug-in irrigation for the nematodes, but they did get the same.
So the nematodes were dumped in the irrigation system, and it took several hours for them to clear the system. So while they were in the system, those trees were plugged, and then I removed the plugs. And typically after nematode application, they irrigate extra to help the nematodes survive. So it was irrigated for another 5 hours after that, and then these trees are irrigated daily. So the control trees did receive several hours less of irrigation, but I feel like in the long term, that shouldn't have very much of an effect since they're so well irrigated. Yeah, in the back.
When you say low persistence, can you give, of course that's going to depend on the year of application,
yeah,
the soil, etc. What would be a ballpark figure here? Are we talking 2-3 months? Are we talking?
So the question is one of how long, what do we mean by poor persistence? In my system, I've done baiting, soil baiting, to see how long these nematodes are in the environment. And when I bait the soil at time zero, they are pretty much everywhere they're expected to be when they came out of the sprinklers. A week later, maybe 5% of those sites still have nematodes. 3 weeks later, nothing. So that, in my system, is very poor.
Thank you.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
That's it?
I'm sorry.
Thank you.